Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Georgia. With me is Greg Velasquez in Iowa. We talk about U.S. men's soccer.
Thanks for downloading this episode of Scuffed. We're going to do a rundown of the news we believe is fit to speak. So there's no unifying principle here, just a lot of action from which to pick and choose and say something about. Greg, how are you?
I'm good, Bells. I feel like that's very applicable here, that no unifying principle. With no U.S. games until the end of May, it feels like we are just keeping track of a lot of scattered storylines throughout Europe and now as MLS starts throughout the U.S.
Yes, us and Greg Berhalter and Brian McBride have a lot to keep track of because there are a lot of players in action. Before we get to some of that, how about that European Super League?
I feel like that is at least one place we won't have to worry about keeping track of players now. And what that means for their FIFA participation.
Yeah, for now until Agnelli and Perez, you know, get back to the table with their new proposal someday. But yeah, you've heard about it all week. It's a dumb idea in my opinion. I'm glad it fell apart. And I'm glad that there were people protesting outside Arsenal's stadium earlier today. Asking that the crankies or the crunkies or whatever, however you say that, get out of their club.
Is it going to happen?
I doubt that.
The shame they live with. All right.
Yeah. They should feel some shame for sure. Okay. You want me to start here? Can I start?
Yeah, let's get right into our rundown. Rundown roundup.
I want to start by talking about two different Bayern Munich players. Well, I guess one is an FC Dallas player still on loan at Bayern Munich. But first one is Chris Richards. He is a Bayern Munich player. I'm allowing myself now to be very excited about his development. Thought he played incredibly well against RB Leipzig a week ago in a 0-0 draw, which was Hoffenheim's second straight clean sheet. He also keyed the move for the winning goal against Gladbach a couple days ago by taking the ball off a guy and then passing it down the wing. I mean, there was still a lot to do, but he started the move. He's really playing well, don't you think?
I think he's playing well. Do you think he's playing like better now than he was in his first three appearances for Hoffenheim? I'm just kind of curious.
I do, but it'll be no surprise to you that I have no data to back that up. He just looks more comfortable. He looks more confident. I thought the Leipzig game in particular was a revelation because he was tested so much, you know, in really important ways by a top team. They tested his ability to pass out of the back and to defend good, solid, top four Bundesliga attacking talent. And he handled both of those tests very, very well. And he did that in a back four rather than a back three. You know, he's been playing a lot in a back three, and in this game he was in a back four. I think he was in a back four against Gladbach too.
Believe so, yep.
So, yeah, go ahead.
That Leipzig performance basically derailed any chance Leipzig had of winning the title. They were still in the race at that point, and now basically no longer are because it can flip that quickly when you're chasing Bayern Munich. But, that was a huge deal to see him pass that test in particular. The way Leipzig press and what they offer going forward on their own accord, to see him do that well against Leipzig is pretty massive. It's a pretty good data point.
It is. I mean, because don't you remember, like, we were talking about him playing against Molde, the Scandinavian club. I can never remember which country. The Scandinavian club. And you know, we were like, well, you know, let's see him against some good Bundesliga teams. And then he's gotten more and more experience under his belt. And then this is, you know, short of playing Bayern Munich, that's the top level in the Bundesliga to play against Leipzig. And I don't know, experience is the argument for Aaron Long over Richards for the national team. And I haven't ripped into Berhalter. I don't think neither of us has. I don't think either of us has for preferring Long in the most recent window, which has been to the chagrin of some listeners. But it's getting harder to see that rationale. And I think it's going to get even harder come September.
Well, and part of the not ripping into him is more about whether Berhalter truly rates Long over Richards, or if it's just a matter of how Berhalter feels the best way to integrate Richards would be, and if he wants to integrate him gradually, which I think is okay for a center back, then it sort of makes sense. So it'll kind of be like retroactively, we'll kind of look back at it and say, okay, we see what he was doing, or we'll say, oh man, he just really doesn't rate Chris Richards if Richards never gets sort of integrated into that starting spot.
Yeah.
Or a chance to.
Yep. And I think
the contrast would be like Sergiño Dest, who upon breaking through at Ajax immediately jumped into our team in the next round of friendlies and, you know, is now was the locked starter somewhere in the 11 for every game since.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's just to zoom back a little bit, this was one of the big questions, I think, for the spring was, is Chris Richards gonna, you know, once he went to Hoffenheim, like, is he gonna emerge? Is he gonna become a legitimate first team center back starting option? And I think we can unfurl the banner. It's mission accomplished, you know?
Yeah, at the end of last year, you know, when we knew McKenzie was moving to Genk from Philadelphia, like that became, so he was kind of taking the center back hype train over. Like it was like, okay, well, McKenzie's moving, because it just felt like Richards was going to be buried at Bayern for the rest of the year. And we would just not be able to really see him outside of the three Liga or once Bayern clinched. There was all this excitement growing around McKenzie, and that has totally flipped with McKenzie sort of, you know, having a start and stop, arrival or performances so far with Genk. I think he's been hurt the last two games. He hasn't been in the squad, but yes,
yeah.
You know, we didn't know Richards was moving. It was a late transfer in the window. And then he just has immediately stepped in and looked the part. He's commandeered the hype train back.
Right. I think it's fair to say, it's very reasonable to say, he looks more assured and more competent than McKenzie at a higher level. So
totally fair.
Yeah. So speaking of young center backs, there's another one in Southwest Germany. Another guy who came up through the FC Dallas setup, and I'm really excited about him too. His name is Justin Che. He's still very young, only 17, but he has now started two matches in a row at center back for Bayern 2, which puts him on exactly the same track as Chris Richards, only he's 18 months ahead. You know, Richards didn't start doing that until he was 19. And I really think, I mean, just looking at the clips, I haven't been able to watch those games live, but looking at his involvements, he looks the part. He's a fluid athlete. He's plenty technical. He looks like a big, big, big center back prospect. Now, he is a dual national with, as I understand it, you know, real affinity for Germany. So there may be a challenge for the U.S. there. But at this point, we got to give Berhalter and McBride the benefit of the doubt on the dual national thing, because they've done a good job on that.
Yeah, suddenly Justin Che is a favorite for the Gold Cup. He'll be heavily featured in our big summer roster episode.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit of context.
I wouldn't hate it.
A little bit of context on him being ahead of Richards on the pathway at Bayern. As I understand it, the youth leagues in Germany are still shut down for COVID. Is that right? So there isn't a U19 team.
Richards was
playing with the Bayern U19 team right away. And there is no such team anymore. So Che goes right into the, I mean, he still has to be good enough that they can play him in those three Liga games, and he still has to look the part, which he has. But that is just a little bit of context on their respective paths through the Bayern development system.
That's a good point. It's definitely given him a boost. And the, you know, the U19 level at Bayern is not so shabby, because you get to play in those UEFA Youth League, that UEFA Youth League tournament, which is like Champions League. All the Champions League clubs send their U19 teams to this concurrent tournament. But Che looks pretty good, and I hope we can keep him. So now, anything else on those two guys, Greg?
No. Yeah, like I said, excited for hopefully seeing one of them this summer, and maybe the other one gets a lookout.
Oh man, Richards in the Nations League, Che in the Gold Cup. No, it's not going to happen, I don't think. We have a couple of new features, and if they're anything like any of our other new features, they will be one-time features. They'll never feature again.
But we get very excited about our features.
I mean, if you went through the graveyard of scuffed podcast features, it'd be a pretty extensive property. So what are we working with here, Greg?
All right, so right now we're having the weekly 4th-8 status report, where we go in depth on all of the players competing for the 4th-8 slot on the World Cup 23.
So who are the first 3 8s? Just to refresh everyone's memory,
Weston McKennie, Yunus Musa, and we are giving the third one to Sebastian Legette pretty comfortably. That isn't necessarily all the way through the World Cup, but that is at least going through the impending qualifiers.
Yeah. I'm good with those three. So who do we have as the fourth for this 4th-8 status update? And what have they been up to?
All right, so number one, and the one I'm super excited about because he finally got back on the field, is Paxton Pomykal. Got like a 25-minute cameo in FC Dallas' league opener. I wasn't sure he'd play. I hadn't heard much of him playing in any of the preseason games. He's obviously working his way back from a long absence from injury. So it was really cool to see. He didn't have a lot to do in that 0-0 draw, but whatever. He's back on the field. Hopefully that, you know, he just continues to sort of increase his role for the team as we get farther into the season, because he's got 2 months to get ready for the Gold Cup, which is where I'm hoping to see him.
Yeah. He, you know, Dallas has been kind of coy. Has been kind of coy about him for the last month or so. It was a surprise that he got on the field because he didn't play in any of the preseason games. But yeah, like you said, didn't have much to do. Dallas is not a lot of fun to watch right now. It's kind of a bummer because they have so many national team prospects. But
well, Pomykal hurt, Jesus Ferreira hurt, Tanner Tessman, we're going to assume, is missed most of preseason with Olympics, so he's got to be gradually worked in. He did not get into the game in the opener, so he's also on our radars, 4th-8, so we'll consider him covered. But also in that game was another 4th-8 candidate for Colorado, Kellen Acosta.
Yeah, but he was playing left back. And
so he didn't get a lot
over of Sam, over Sam Vines. Was Vines still quarantined or something?
Injured. He's sidelined with injury, but I don't know what the specifics of the injury are. And he also missed a lot of the preseason down in Guadalajara.
Okay. Well, you know, I mean, that's sort of intriguing to me that Acosta is still getting, however occasional they may be, minutes at the professional level at left back, because, you know, that sort of positional versatility is somewhat attractive.
It definitely is for actual tournament setting. I don't think it's super valuable for the World Cup windows, because I assume there's tons of flexibility between games to change rosters for injury or suspension. But for an actual tournament, it is, especially when I still think our second left back, and some people would even argue our first left back spot, is an area of weakness or uncertainty. So if you were thinking of just bringing Serginho Dest as a one possible left back and then Anthony Robinson as the other, and you wanted a little bit more flexibility to not carry a true backup to Robinson at left back, then maybe a Kellen Acosta could be an emergency fill-in. And you don't waste a spot on a guy you don't feel great about.
Right. It's definitely a point in his favor. Acosta's, that is. All right, who else? Luca De La Torre. What's he been up to?
Heracles was off last weekend, so we don't really have much on him. Just going to keep tabs on him this weekend. Julian Green, I'm throwing in this list. Racked up another assist. Sort of more importantly, his team right now are sitting second in the double Bundesliga. We were corrected on our pronunciation. It's not the two Bundesliga. It's actually pronounced the double Bundesliga.
I thought it was the second Bundesliga.
No. It's the double Bundesliga. So Julian Green's team is sitting in second place, which is an automatic promotion spot. And they are 4 points clear of Hamburg, who's chasing him five games left to go. So there's a pretty decent chance that Julian Green is a single Bundesliga player next year. Man,
pretty cool. Greuther Fürth, back in the Bundesliga. I wonder when their last time in the first division was. I'm not going to look it up right now.
I'm actually curious, like, if Julian Green gets there and plays 90 minutes on the opener for them, I think that would, like, double his total Bundesliga minutes in his career.
Man, good for him. And, you know, he's in the mix. We got to admit, he's in the mix from an objective point of view. He's what, 25, 26 at the
most? Something like that.
Somebody who's like, probably not... Go ahead.
Well, one of the only guys in the pool at this point with World Cup experience. And certainly... That's right. It's him and Brooks with World Cup goals.
Yeah, man. Never forget that goal. Christian Roldan, I would say he's not so much in the mix anymore, but maybe he is. Maybe Berhalter thinks he is.
For Gold Cup, I feel like he easily could be. He looked good for Seattle in their opener, and he was kind of all over the field, almost like this, like a totally free role to just support where needed. But he had a lot of really good moments in that thrashing of Minnesota.
Did he? I mean, I only watched the first half of that game, and it looked Minnesota looked like the clearly superior team. And then I went and watched something else, or I don't know, changed somebody's diaper or something. And I come back, and it's 4-0. You know, so I was a little, that was a little shocking for me.
Now Roldan looked good, and it's another thing where. I'm not super high on Roldan generally, and I didn't think he was very good in what he was being asked to do through all of 2019 for the national team. But in the changed up sort of system that we've adopted, I don't know how Roldan would fit, and he's certainly, I think, going to be asking questions of Berhalter. And Berhalter, I think, likes the guy, so he was in January camp, and again with the extra competition with the Gold Cup this summer, wouldn't surprise me at all if Roldan sort of one of the Berhalter veterans that sort of helps the group along, and then it's his opportunity to seize.
Yeah, it's not hard to imagine that at all. You're right. I was wrong when I said he's not in the mix. Dead wrong. His teammate Joshua Atencio got the start in the opener for Seattle, and you know, he's, if you're a longtime listener of the Scuffed podcast, you will remember us discussing him a long time ago. But he did kind of fall out of the pick, all out of our picture. When he didn't make the U17 team that went to the World Cup in 2019, fall of 2019. And then he couldn't really break through at Seattle last season or the season before that. So
it wasn't, so we gave up. We gave up on him, washed our hands of him.
Weren't really thinking about that much about him, but he looked good, didn't he? He looked good in the midfield for Seattle.
Yeah, I'm prepared to call him the next Tanner Tessman. This year's Tanner Tessman.
I honestly, for the life of me, don't know what that means. What does that mean?
I don't know. He's like a really tall, like, it's ridiculous, yeah. But like even on screen, he reminded me of him right away. Got kind of that Keaton Parks like languid, super long strides, and then he just kind of like Tessman and a little bit Parks, or maybe more like Parks and a little bit Tessman. He kind of just drifts all over the field. So. You'll see him with the ball, carrying the ball like 60 yards from literally from box to box, and you'll see him clogging up passing lanes in front of the back line. So he was definitely sort of in a role where he was asked to do a lot of different things, and he did them pretty well.
Yeah, he wasn't he didn't look like a transcendent talent, but that's okay. What about Tanner Tessman?
Tessman didn't get in. Tessman didn't play. We already talked about him when we were talking about Pomacall. No minutes for him in game one, and I'm just going to chalk it up to. Olympic fatigue.
Sure. So this is the most interesting part to me. You've been doing a little research on Alex Mendez and watched some of his clips. He's back to getting more minutes for a young Ajax. I'm not giving up on him. What have you seen lately?
So he had his first start like last week. First start in probably a year. I don't remember when his last start was. But he looked good. He looked really tidy. Ajax aren't asking their center mids to do necessarily what Berhalter will ask of his central midfielder. So it would remain to be seen whether Mendes would even be considered for one of our center mid spots, or if he would essentially be fighting for like a winger and tucked in winger role where he's going to be doing more of the playmaker stuff in playmaking areas of the field. But he was just very tidy in his 70, 80 odd minutes for a young Ajax. Hit a couple of typically like incisive Alex Mendes disguised passes. took some very good set pieces, and bodied a guy. You saw the clip where he bodied that dude.
Yeah, you were the one who provided that clip, and then I tweeted it out. But yeah, that you love to see that because that has not been his calling card at Young Ajax or even, you know, at any level, really. So to see him use his shoulder and put somebody down is good to see. Yeah, he could, you know, totally theoretically, totally hypothetically, he could work as that like right winger who drops in and or helps orchestrate things. And, you know, having him come inside on his left foot and with the opportunity to shoot is a, you know, tantalizing prospect, I think.
Yeah,
but, you know, there's a lot long way to go.
And the lesson of the Kellen Acosta and Luca Dele Torre is just don't write the kids off yet. Like, he might not have an impact in the next year, and he could still come in and be a piece at some point down the line. He's still essentially like a child. Is he 20, 21?
Yeah, he's 20. He turns 21 in September. I know that because he and Richie Ledesma have the same birthday. Have the same birthday, which is one day after my birthday. Except, you know,
years apart.
18, a couple years difference. All right,
there are probably 10 other eights that we could talk about here. Keaton Parks we just mentioned, but we're not going to get into all of them every week. This is just going to be as this is definitely going to be a recurring weekly feature. we'll just talk about them a fair number of them each week.
Okay, fair enough. We're hoping that this is a short podcast. So far, not so good. But here we go. Second six. The second six feature. Who are the second sixes?
The second sixes. It sounds like a fraternity. The second sixes start with Kellen Acosta, I think. Yeah. It starts with Jackson Yule, right?
In Berhalter's mind, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And did you watch San Jose and
I was not able to watch that one.
Who'd they just lose to? Houston?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. So we actually, speaking of Houston, we need to actually add Joe Corona to the eight list because he looked pretty good. And I know, like, everyone wants to just be done with the guys who are not 25 and younger. I mean, we're like the ringleaders of that kind of movement. But yeah. It changed. I think that math has to change as we're now, like, approaching the actual World Cup qualifying. This isn't 2018 and 19 where it was like a free-for-all of auditions. Like, we need to pick the guys who will for sure get the job done. And if that means a Joe Corona or an Ali Bedoya, like, whatever. Like, if that player is literally better than whoever we're going to pick for the fourth eight, like, bring that player in. So I don't know that that's Joe Corona at the moment, but if he, like, puts together a string of really good games, he's gonna show up in our fourth eight status reports.
Totally. Totally. That's a really good point about having to shift the mindset a little bit. It's gonna be hard for me. But also, here, let me fire off an email to the project manager of the second six feature.
There we go. Okay. All right. So,
very good.
So Jackson Yule, getting back to Yule, in that game against Houston, I don't think he looked particularly great. And what I think is strange about the fact that he's almost like the prohibitive favorite, it seems like, with Berhalter to be our second six is, I feel like he's going to have a lot of MLS games where he just doesn't look very good.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. I mean, I didn't watch the game, like I said, but there apparently San Jose's attack was pretty anemic. Is that right?
I would say that's fair.
So I don't know. It's hard to get super excited about Yule because I think his physical limitations are going to really be could really be a problem come, you know, meaningful World Cup qualifiers and definitely the World Cup if we manage to get there.
Well, we'll call it an Olympic hangover for him too, and we'll check in on him next week when we revisit the second sixes.
Yep. Who else we got? And Andres Perea came in off the bench for Orlando City.
Yeah, came in at half, and I didn't actually get a chance to check his performance out, so I'm not sure how good he looked. Or even, actually, I'm not even sure if he was playing as a six or if he was sort of playing higher up the field. So we'll need to double-check that. I apologize for not being totally prepared for the second sixes.
There will be some punishments meted out, but that'll be done privately. Perea is as a refresher, was he was kind of okay in the Olympic qualifying tournament, but not great. And I didn't come in and say, like, I'm going to be a six for the national team. Taylor Booth has had a bit of a renaissance at St. Poulton in the Austrian league, you know, on loan from Bayern. And I don't know, I think he's a nice player. I know you think he's more of an eight. I think he's kind of playing as more of an eight.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a better fit for the fourth eights than the second sixes. I want to just keep saying these over and over. This is going to work, Bells. These features are going to stick.
And yeah, I mean, he's gotten some goals and some assists, and he does get forward for St. Poulton. I mean, I've seen him play for the Bayern U19s as a six, just a metronome type six, because he's pretty clean on the ball, and he has pretty good passing range and good decision making, quick decision making. One thing that's kind of interesting about him is he's not a bad athlete. I think he looks a little quicker than, say, like a Jackson Ewell, maybe even a little stronger, although it's hard to compare the two leagues. So just somebody to keep an eye on. He's not going to get a Nations League call-up. Seems pretty unlikely he'd get a Gold Cup call-up, but he's out there.
Maybe. You know, everyone's like super excited about Aronson, and I think, you know, it's justified. But, you know, Aronson's scoring and putting assists up, and it makes a big splash every time he does. I think Booth has the same stat line in the Austrian league as Aronson, in like 200 fewer minutes and for quite literally the bottom team in the league. So, you know, racking up stats with Salzburg is going to be a little bit easier because they score so many more goals as a team. Booth is doing it for the worst team in the Austrian league, and he's doing it at a pretty ridiculous rate.
Yeah. I mean, Aronson benefits a lot in the fan consciousness because he looked so good for the national team when he came on against Jamaica and Northern Ireland. But
yeah, and the MLS All 11 season and the $6 million price tag matter a lot for that too. But I mean, it's just something to keep in mind about if you are excited about what Aronson is doing in the Austrian league. It stands to reason that you could maybe get a little bit excited about what Taylor Booth is doing in the Austrian league.
Fair, 100% fair.
I'm judging people's excitement levels.
Another guy is Chris Durkin, who, you know, is getting defensive midfield minutes for St. Truiden. Both of these guys play for teams with Saint in the name. St. Truiden in Belgium, including a full 90 against Anderlecht in a 1-0 loss most recently. I think he looks okay. He looks like a decent player. I don't know that there's like a strong rationale that he shouldn't be in the picture right now, but there's no strong rationale that he should, I guess.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I'm going to say he's a super long shot for the for even like a Gold Cup, because he's been there doing this thing. He's been getting a lot of minutes for St. Truiden for two seasons now, and his name has never appeared in the U.S. soccer internal watching guide, the viewing guide every weekend, which leads me to believe that he's not in their plans. Mm. I'm digging into that thing pretty like deep at this point.
I don't even know how to find it, so I'm glad you are. They probably tweet it out, don't they? Well, what about Darlington Nagbe? You know, what about Darlington Nagbe?
We love him. He's a treasure.
Gone? Yeah.
It's not happening, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Involved, yeah. James Sands.
So James Sands and Alfredo Morales, both potentially going to be New York City center mids. Morales didn't start in their opener. Sands did. Sands started next to Parks. But it didn't seem like that was really working. Not those two, just the whole team wasn't really functioning. There's some speculation that Sands will move to center back and Morales will get the start in center midfield. So just another couple of Americans. We could have three Americans sort of in central midfield roles all at once for New York City.
Cool.
So there are clear second six implications there.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. The second sixes and the fourth eights. I have to write a jingle. Before we get out of here, and we do want to keep this pretty brief, Wes McKennie, I'm just going to say quickly, Wes McKennie had some nice moments that came across the Twitter transom. for Juventus in the past couple games. He started both of them for Juve. Don't follow him that closely right now because he's a nailed-on U.S. starter. It doesn't really matter that much. And same goes for Serginho Dest. He had his ups and downs this season, but he did win Copa del Rey, got a picture with Lionel Messi. There's that. Tyler Adams, fairly typical performances from him lately. I do think it's interesting how much he's in contact with Nagelsmann on the sideline. I think it's fun to watch that. Two cerebral barristers going through a soccer game together. And the fact that when Nagelsmann gets impatient with his wingbacks, he just pulls them off and puts Adams out there is interesting. And you know, it means that right back, Tyler Adams at right back thing will probably never die. It will be nice to have it in the back pocket, you know, come World Cup time, assuming we qualify.
So we're going to end up with Adams at right back and Acosta at left back for our big knockout game against Germany.
Oh man, wouldn't that be hilarious? I mean, it wouldn't be, but, and then the last name I want to talk about today is Caden Clark, who, you know, has gotten a lot of hype going into the season. And then he scored in their first game against the Red Bulls, first game against Sporting KC, a very high level of difficulty goal. I thought, Bob Morocco put it nicely. I can't remember exactly how he put it, but you know, that ball at that height, being able to get good contact on it in a split second is super effing hard, man. That's hard to do.
You know, and what he did. The other goal that just happened that reminded me of that difficulty is Daryl Dike in his overhead kick, where he had to adjust immediately to an unexpected path of the ball. Where you didn't know it was going to bounce, and suddenly it did, and it's directly over your head, and it's like, why not? I'll just invert myself here and score yet another goal.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about that. It happened yesterday, didn't it, or 2 days ago?
Mm-hmm. 2 days ago
DK,
now.
DK had his ninth goal of the season. Yeah, ninth goal of the season, an overhead kick. Not quite a bicycle, but...
No, I won't allow the bicycle nomenclature here, but yes, he and Caden Clark are in the same boat in that you blink and they've scored yet another goal, and they are very statistically unsustainable, but I'm enjoying the hell out of it.
Yeah. Well, the thing about Clark is, you know, he did score that high difficulty goal, and he was working his tail off defending in that game. He's running hard and putting pressure on people, so you like to see that. But he does need to find the game more. And he attempted only 23 passes and one dribble, I think, per Y Scout. And I'm not sure how much of that is his fault, how much is the fault of the team not looking particularly sharp, because it was not a lovely game of soccer. So anyway, that's the thing to look for. Hopefully Clark can get, you know, 40 or 50 touches on the ball, 50 or 60, 60 or 70 in their upcoming games, and continue to score these unsustainable goals.
Well, New York has brought in second six Frankie Amaya, so maybe he can help clean things up in there.
That's right. I think Amaya might clean things up in there. He was a good asset for Cincinnati last year. Finally, Nations League camp convenes in about a month. Then the Gold Cup, which is happening, we learned yesterday, mostly in Texas and the Southeast. Kansas City. The only northern state with some games, the only northern city with some games. And it's debatable whether Kansas City is even a northern city, you know.
I'm not interested in that debate. I'm just glad that there's one within 3 hours of me. So that's all you can ask for when you live in Iowa is a 3-hour trip to a soccer game.
That's perfect.
And we've got that. So I'll have been well into my vaccination program by then. I'm hoping that the U.S. gets a game there, which would surprise me if they didn't. I feel like they've always gotten games there, so I'm pretty hopeful to go see them play.
I'm hopeful to join you. Gonna have to talk to my spouse about it. Anything else, Greg?
That's it for this week, man. Let's round this up.
All right. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see ya.